Hi, and welcome to the Planet Podcast, the technology-based podcast from Baltimore, Maryland. My name is Patrick Roanhaus, and I'm your host, and my guest today is a previous Planet Podcast guest, Mark Millen from the LA Times. How are you doing today, Mark?
Doing pretty good.
It is quite early right now, is it not?
It is pretty early, 6 o'clock for me on the West Coast.
9:25 for me. It's been a lovely week as well. I've had a swimmer's ear, which has been fun.
Oh, that sounds great.
I know, it has been. It has been.
Have you been going swimming in the winter?
No, I am prone to somehow getting them. In the last year, I've started having them every so many months. It's quite fun. But I trudged through the pain to bring news of this week's big tech stories. And the first story that I'm going to bring up is NVIDIA demos a new 3D Blu-ray format. From hothardware.com, there's a story of NVIDIA showing off at Santa Clara, California on December 9th, a new, basically they're going to be touting a new format of 3D that will be part of the Blu-ray spec. They're going to be showing it off at CES this year in January, and basically it requires you have, for PCs, it requires you have a GeForce GPU with the NVIDIA 3D Vision Active Shutter glasses. So it's possible, from the looks of this, that it probably does not need to have a separate display.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it. I'm surprised they actually announced this so far in advance of CES, because they have quite a bit of detail here, but it's by no means complete. They don't even seem to directly address whether you need a separate television.
Yeah, I think the reason why a lot of companies I've noticed have been starting to do this is they'll do like a soft display, so their names like fomented before journalists get to CES.
That's probably a good idea, because once you're in the conference hall, it's all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, where should I go first? I do not know. Let's go to NVIDIA.
That's probably their plan. But I don't know. How do we feel about this 3D TV stuff?
I'm glad I bought a really, really cheap ass HD television set when I bought a television for HD, that was only $600, because I knew something bigger and better was going to come out in the next 5 years after I bought it. So, I have to say, it's probably what's going to happen is you're going to see, HD or HD 3D. And then another year after that, you're going to start seeing 4K and 3K TVs, and it'll just be the whole battle over again the next 6 years, I think.
But, I mean, do we need 3D? I don't think I've...
James Cameron did not work his ass off on Avatar to not have 3D.
Is NVIDIA making this for Avatar? Is there any other reason to release this?
I actually have seen demos of 3D games, and it really is an immersive experience. When I was at Macworld earlier this year, there was a third-party company who had a non-glasses-requiring 3D display, and they had Call for Duty on there, and it didn't require any software patches. And using the gun reticle in the game was definitely an interesting experience, because you definitely have this sense of depth that you really gets you far more immersed into the game, which would probably be scary for some people who play games all day long.
Get some post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Exactly.
I think NVIDIA actually was showing off some 3D stuff at BlizzCon, World of Warcraft in 3D, but I think that you needed glasses in order to play. And this, too, spec they're announcing for Blu-ray, it looks like you're going to need to wear the glasses.
Yes. I love that all the 3D technologies are requiring glasses, because I already wear glasses.
So you put the big, bulky black glasses on top of your own?
Sometimes. So, next up, your story.
Okay, so I picked out Google Ads real-time web results. So now, for certain queries, you search something in Google, and you'll get this live scrolling box that's pulling from Twitter and what few Facebook updates are out there that relate to your search. And this, as far as I can remember, this is one of the most significant changes Google has made rolling it out to everybody at once. And I'm not sure if this is helping me at all. It's kind of just the clutter in the search results.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Google, I'm more of, I watch with a wary eye because they could easily, it's that whole, if you were looking at a superhero in a comic book, it's one bad day that could turn it all around, I'm saying.
I mean, they have so much of our data that I think I'm locked in. I think it's over.
I know. I already use, their Gmail for everything, and I use it for the Planet's email system is all using Google domain apps as well. So, yeah, I've already sold my soul.
Yeah. I think we're going to Skynet fairly soon.
That's actually pretty funny because I was mentioning it last week. So, one of the stories was about the OpenDNS, and Busted T actually has a T-shirt that says Skynet.
Nice.
Yes. In the Google color logo system.
Nice. I was talking to Chris Weatherall, who built Google Reader, used to be at Google for a couple of years, and now he makes Brizzly. And he said that Google has always had this ongoing joke where somebody's bound to make all of this stuff in Terminator, all the Skynet and whatnot, so they might as well make a sentient detector now.
Great.
You probably shouldn't be telling me that. People are already scared of Google.
Uh-huh. All right, so the next story that I have is Samsung has finally teased a little bit of their new Bada OS at an event. They did a event at... where was it again? Sorry.
This is the mobile Linux distro?
Yes, this is their own version of Linux for their mobile phones. And they did a private demo? Sorry, I'm looking again real quick. Doesn't say where they had it, but basically Samsung is coming up with another operating system for more phones that's Linux-based. And when I first heard this news a while ago, when they first announced it, I was very hesitant because I was like, really? You're going to make another OS? Great. But surprisingly, they have some pretty big name developers already on the list. They have Twitter, they have Facebook. They're also going to have, surprisingly, they have Capcom, of all people.
Capcom, EA.
That's a
weird mix of names.
Yeah, but they have Konami and a bunch of other different makers as well. So they had a demo of Resident Evil Degeneration for the phone. And it surprisingly looked somewhat decent for its motion, for 3D, 3D gameplay. Hmm. So I guess time will tell to see how this works. But they will have an app store for it as well, they say.
Oh, surprise. Are you a user of Linux on the desktop?
I do have, not lately as a desktop user, because my only personal computer is my MacBook Pro. But I do use Linux frequently for client-server work and stuff like that. So I am a Linux user.
My main gripe with Linux is the vast majority of the distros are so poorly designed. They're just not attractive interfaces. And I don't think Bada looks any better.
Yeah, it's definitely, looking at some of the basic UI, they show, the front page part of it. I'm like, this looks like something that was out, when Symbian came out. I mean,
It looks really old.
I know. I mean, even Android looks better than their UI interface for, easy integration. Because that way you can have this, streaming feed right on the front of your phone, and it shows the updates of, every, Facebook or Twitter combined. And I'm like, really? Really? Really?
And Android's built on Linux, right?
Yeah, Android is also built on Linux, but it's a little bit different. Because, unlike, say, Bada and also Motoblur, which is the one for our what's the one that's Nokia's? That's the
Nokia. I have no idea.
Oh, they have that. They have the one that's on the 900 series. But like Bata supposedly and the one from Nokia are true Linux distributions, so they kind of work like a normal Linux system, while Android is kind of like a little different. It doesn't use the same placements of where files are and stuff like that, so it's a little bit different when you're developing apps. You can't just like straight up port a Linux app from the desktop onto Android.
In terms of interface, though, Android looks decently slick.
Yes, I would agree. And you have people like HTC making their version of the interface as well, which is quite a lovely thing.
Yes, I don't think we'll be seeing any third-party iPhone developers.
No, I doubt that. So, your story, the next one.
Yes, well, speaking of Nokia, Apple countersues Nokia. Nokia's claim in October that they were stealing IP for the iPhone. Apple countersued them yesterday, saying that Nokia stole from us also. It's this this lovely mobile manufacturer catfight, which I love. The Apple article is, in standard Steve Jobs fashion, is basically this grand, like, FU to Nokia. What was in that file? Let me look back. Oh, the best, they were pulling out quotes from Nokia executives over the years. All of these, like, journalists asked them about the iPhone, and they're like, oh, yeah, we were happy to copy anything better. It was well done, but I think this is just a stupid little catfight that hopefully gets thrown out or settled for very little money on each side.
I mean, like, when it comes to things like this, it's almost like, it's like seeing children squabble and being like, Mom, Apple hit me! I mean, looking at some of the complaints that they have, like, it's like, Apple accuses Nokia of, infringing method of creating packages for pointer-based computer systems, infringing pattern and color abstraction in the graphical user interface, object-oriented telephony system. I'm like, really? This is like basic OS stuff.
You gotta be impressed that Apple got patents on them.
Well, it's like, I think that when it comes down to this, Nokia probably will be able to be like, prior art and vice versa for Apple. I just think that basically they're like squabbling at each other because they're like, I don't like you, I don't like you.
These big companies have patents for everything, and they almost never actually go after the other companies unless attacked. And I think Nokia woke the bull in Apple, and they're actually, I think that was the quote from the article, woke the bull and giving them the horns.
So, next story, I have, if you remember back at the dawn of, the last presidential elections, we had Sarah Palin had her email account, quote unquote, hacked by, David Koerner, now a, 21-year-old, student and son of a, Tennessee Democratic politician. The big hoopla was that it was a Yahoo email account that supposedly was, if you're aware of Yahoo's system, in order to get the password, they give you the 5 standard questions in order to get the password retrieval. And you can type in a different email address saying, hey, send it to here. Well, his lawyers are coming up with a new defense for him in that he had spyware on his computer. I find that to be a very valid defense, and I wish all the best to Mr. Colonel and his legal team, because surprisingly this defense has worked in the past for far worse transgressions, such as, you know, sadly, child pornography, but also other, you know, crimes like people downloading files from the internet and stuff like that. It's been proven that distributed botnets have been able to use people's computers as distributed web servers. And a legitimate argument for defense, I do say.
Are you serious?
For the distributed web stuff?
Are you serious that you think that's a good argument? I think it's actually a good argument in that our judicial system is You're gonna be, oh, I don't know, maybe, yeah, sure.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's you know, reasonable doubt, and I think actually from all aspects, it is a good argument, and I hope he wins, because one of the fallouts out of the emails being opened up was the whole Troopergate stuff. If you remember hearing about that, where it was the one Alaskan state trooper who was fired because of political reasons with Palin's husband, and the fact that Governor Palin was using her Yahoo account for all of her government work. So if anyone wanted to get some Freedom of Information Act on it eventually, can't really give you that email because it's private.
That is an awful impression.
You know what? I'm tired, sir. It's in the morning, and I call swimmer's ear.
Well, if this spyware defense works, then that's huge for anybody subpoenaed by the RIAA for piracy downloads. Like this, you can use that for just about any computer related issue.
Unless you're using a Mac, then not so much.
Oh, all right. I'm throwing out my MacBook. Get a Windows PC.
Yes, and make sure it's not patched and you don't have Windows 7. Gotta have the XP.
Gotta love XP.
So, what's this news about Vivo that you got?
Vivo. You were a defender of Vivo. I am not so hot on this new Hulu for music videos.
All right, explain more about it then.
Yeah, so YouTube, in partnership with all of the major labels except for Warner, I think, is the holdout, have built this separate website which has music videos, behind the scenes, making of music videos, and it's basically YouTube or Hulu for music videos. And because Google or YouTube built their backend, whenever you search for the music video on YouTube, the official video, it now plays inside of a Vivo frame. And my gripe with this is the labels touted it, and Bono had the most hilarious quotes during that unveiling in New York City, just calling it like, we're mourning the death of the music industry as it was, and this is a rebirth, and this is going to save the industry, and it's a new business model. The entire thing is YouTube with pre-roll ads that you can't skip. And it provides absolutely no value beyond that. There's a lyrics button, like live lyrics that display over music videos. Not that cool. And there were people doing that with custom YouTube videos anyway. So we get these 15-second pre-roll ads, and that's basically Vivo in a nutshell.
Well, I think the reason why I defended this was because the technology is going to be the groundwork probably for YouTube coming out with a more full-fledged service, you know, like Hulu, where you do have full television shows and full movies on demand. And the fact that the 1080p that's on, you know, YouTube right now is actually surprisingly impressive. If anyone's seen the Bohemian Rhapsody by the Muppets viral video that was on there, that was the first to demo it.
Oh, love that.
Oh, God, that was brilliant. Like, I watch it, and you're like, you try it with Flash 10.0, and you're like juddering and jittering and just like freezing up, and then you upgrade to the 10.1 version of Flash, and it's like smooth as butter. But your browser will then start crashing every so often then, too, so...
Does HTML5 support this 1080p stuff?
It should actually, yes, because the HTML5 is basically just providing a tag that would allow you to put, like, say, video, and the browser itself would then be able to use whatever framework that's on your computer for your video playback to play the video. So if it was, like, in Apple, it would be, you know, QuickTime would handle it. And so because of the fact that YouTube's using H.264 for its entire back end of the videos... QuickTime would have the ability of, you know, using hardware acceleration to render the 1080p video as well. So
I can't wait to dump Flash. These Adobe products are just so bloated. I refuse to install Air. The only Adobe product I use is Photoshop. Flash is just, it's so bloated and drags down my system every time I watch a video.
Yeah, I it's funny because sometimes, like in 10.0, the CPU usage when you're playing a video in HD on YouTube would jump your processor if you had, because you have multiple cores on the Mac, it jumps mine up to 120% CPU usage, because that's over the two processors. But as soon as they came out with the newest version, because they're using the GPU acceleration now for playback, it only was requiring 50% of my CPU.
Okay. It's a pretty significant improvement, but still not significant.
Yeah, it's because you're still dependent on having a plugin that, you know, now because it's a beta version still, is whenever you go to a bunch of pages, if it doesn't like what it's trying to play, it causes the browser to crash.
You would think that if they're making one of the most ubiquitous computer plugins, that they would make it well.
You know what? They're the only person who's making it, so they can do whatever they want. Because you really think people are going to switch over to Silverlight? I think not.
I refuse to install Silverlight either. I just can't wait for this HTML5. I want offline use without these gears, and I want drag and drop files.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty pumped for this.
Well, talking about not having a great working system, let's talk about Facebook.
Okay. So we got some new privacy controls on Facebook, which seems pretty boring to start. And I think Facebook wanted it to look that way, that it's just a minor change and they're simplifying your privacy and open things up. But this could be a problem. Facebook has always been this place where you go just to connect with your friends, and a lot of people put up some much riskier pictures, I think, than they would put on their blog or on Twitter. And it's not totally clear when you set up these new privacy controls that Facebook is giving you a not-so-gentle nudge to make a lot more of your things open to everyone. Everyone meaning not just your friends, but everyone who can search Google. The one thing I do like about this is the everyone button, which you can choose per status update what you want to make public. So my barrier between like Facebook being Twitter is that I didn't want to create a fan page. Like, I'd like to send out links to stuff that I write for the Times, but I'm not going to create a fan page. Good thing about Twitter is that from the beginning, everything was public. So you kind of have that mindset going into it.
What's pretty funny is, did you hear about on ValueWag the information about how even Zuckerberg was confused by the privacy setting?
No.
On ValueWag, one second, let me get the link.
So why does that not surprise me? Zuckerberg, he's just hilarious. He's one of the funniest CEOs in the Valley.
Yes, here is the link I'll send you, and I'll put it in the show notes. Good old Mark was himself confused by the new settings, and by accident was able to let 290 pictures of him and different sets of partying and hanging out with friends open to the public for viewing.
Do we know if that was on purpose?
Shortly thereafter, when I got posted on ValueWag, they shortly disappeared.
That's great.
I know.
Look at him with his lightsaber. These are terrible photos.
There is a picture that is the cutest of them all. Mark in his PJs holding a teddy bear.
What number is that one?
That is number 4.
Oh, that is hideous. This is great. I mean, Zuckerberg is just really funny in that he's the CEO that was thrown into this place of incredible influence, and you can so tell that he's not ready for it. He does just like some really funny things, and even the people at Facebook. I remember when he joined a group that was called We already hate Facebook's next new feature. He joins that group, and I remember his PR people were just like, "Oh, Mark."
Oh, that's quite humorous. But yeah, I think it's quite funny, Mark Zuckerberg, the kind of, take on stuff, just the entire history of, Facebook. It's actually kind of funny because they're filming the Facebook movie at Johns Hopkins, which is just a few blocks from where I live. And I was having coffee with a friend of mine, and we were watching as across the street they had a couple of different actors. What's his face from Zombieland? That actor.
The main guy?
Yeah.
From Cheers. Damn, what's his name? Woody Harrelson.
Not Woody Harrelson, the young guy,
Oh, the kid. Yeah, he's playing Mark, right?
Yeah, he's playing Mark, and just watching him across the street and, like, arguing while they have a bunch of different people with cameras and stuff like that setting up. So they're using Johns Hopkins as the set for Harvard, so that's pretty funny to me.
Well, they're close.
Yeah, really, really close.
Justin Timberlake is in this movie, right?
Yes, he plays one of the guys that were the VC people who helped Mark get his money.
This is gonna be the geekiest movie ever.
I don't know. I don't think it's ever going to be anything close to Pirates of Silicon Valley, though.
That's a good point. That movie was awesome.
Yes, that was I was actually at the Macworld where in New York where they had Noah Wiley come up on stage. That was pretty interesting.
I'm surprised Apple would even give any press to that movie.
Hey, supposedly they were really in depth with its storytelling, so why not? It's free advertising back when they were still, not the big top dog they were now.
Yeah, it's
But talking about media playback, new story about Boxy. Tell us about it.
I will start with a disclaimer that I freaking love Boxy. I've canceled cable. I just have a Mac hooked up to a flat screen TV running Boxy. I got my Apple remote. That's all I need. So I was excited to hear about the new. Personally, I was most excited about the new beta, which they have clearly hired a new designer, and it looks much, much better. The Xbox cheesy interface is gone for something very Apple-like, and it's really sleek. It's packed with a lot of new features. My favorite being you can actually queue up shows. So instead of having to click around after every show or every YouTube video you watch through Boxy, you can just pick a bunch, have like a sort of like that party shuffle or iTunes DJ, I think it's
Oh,
called
nice.
now. And even better, you can queue up from your computer. So while you're sitting on the couch, you got your laptop, there's a little bookmarklet. You see something on YouTube you want to watch, you click that, and it appears on your TV, ready to play.
That is pretty sick. I didn't know about that.
Yes, I don't think they really announced that. And when I met up with their CEO Avner, I was like, "This is by far the coolest feature. You should be talking about this." But they also have their first Boxy box coming out. It's being made by D-Link. It is a hideously designed piece of hardware, which was made by the team that designed the Xbox 360, among others, and. It's got HDMI and Wi-Fi, Ethernet, and it's just this small box, kind of like an Apple TV that hooks up to your television set. But it's not closed and unable to do anything like the Apple TV is.
Yeah, when I saw the Boxy box from D-Link, the first thing I thought was, "Dear God, it's a Frank Gehry building." The guy who did the famous the Spain's version of the Guggenheim, and also the Stata Center at MIT. Now, the Spain's version of the Guggenheim is a lovely building. I've been to it before, but the Stata Center, not so good. And that's
We
pretty much.
should describe this box for people who haven't seen it yet.
It's about the size of a Coke can from a picture I saw,
Yep.
in its height. It is, it would be like you took a box and then cut it on an angle in half and then cut that on another angle on the corners, And right. So your plugs come in on a, they're not parallel, they're on a probably 45 degree angle to the back of the box. And I'm like, seriously? Really? Why?
You can't put anything on top of it. It has to be at the top of the stack. Or, I think they said you can hide it away in cabinets because it uses an RF remote, so it doesn't need direct access. Their subtle innuendo, was Boxy likes to be on top, smiley face.
In a way, I was supposed to be at the Brooklyn party release of Boxy, but because of issues with a certain bank that I've chosen, there was a freezing of the account, so I wasn't able to actually make it. And in some ways, I'm actually kind of glad, sadly.
I heard it was a good time. It was super packed.
Yeah, I believe they had about 1,200 people who signed up RSVP, but only had enough room for 600.
Yeah, I think that there were actually 1,800 RSVPs by the time they shut it down. They capped it at 2,000, and clearly they just weren't in touch with the venue because it seemed like they had no idea how many people to fit in there.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think what's really interesting is I think the new UI interface stuff is really nice. I definitely hope to see that they start getting more integration. Like I wish when I heard they were coming out of the box, I wish they would have been able to add some sort of Blu-ray playback or, you know, a disk drive. But I can understand why they took it from the take where they just have a memory card in there.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't even mention a hard drive. I don't know if there's a hard drive in there. I guess they're just looking for internet streaming or streaming from another computer. And I think having a hard drive would probably help quite a bit. You'd want to have a hard drive in there.
Well, you can put you can put in SDHD cards in there, and so...
Yeah, those are expensive.
You'd be surprised. I was able to get a 16 gigabyte one for $20.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're dropping down in price. Very fast. Like, a 32 gigabyte one now costs like $90.
I noticed even the Sony's, the memory stick duos are dropping significantly just because it's only Sony products that use them. So it's kind of like, please, our memory cards are cheap, buy our products.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, talking about interesting engineered things, turns out, in your neck of the woods at UCLA, they have engineered bacteria that can eat carbon dioxide and excrete liquid fuel for excrement. It was
super bacteria, if you will.
You could say such a thing. Basically, it's a modified version of Cyanobacterium cyanococcus elongatus in a petri dish they have here on the page at Science Daily. They show a picture of it. And it was led by UCLA's Henry Samuel School of Engineering and Applied Science. And the team leader was James C. Leal, Chancellor of and Professor of Chemical and Biomolecular Engineering at UCLA, and Associate Director of the UCLA's Department of Energy and Institute for Genomics and Proteomics. So basically, what this thing does is it basically uses... It's photosynthesis. It's an engineered cell that, you know, is able to use sunlight, take carbon dioxide in, and instead of, you know, putting out oxygen, it puts out liquid hydrocarbon fuel, particularly isobutanol.
I just think this is so cool. There's not much else to say about it. It's just really, really cool. There's so much just incredible stuff happening in the science and tech communities that it just seems like we're moving so fast.
Well, it's definitely interesting because this thing could basically take, like, if you could put this on, say, the chimney pipes of biomass burning power plants, you know, you're creating how much more energy from the carbon dioxide that it's scrubbing out, and then, you know, I definitely find this to be an interesting, like, if this could be truly used to help make fuel, would be an interesting process, you know, that might be a little help over as we get off the the slowly drying teat of petroleum.
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's basically using your own waste in order to create new energy, which is exactly what we need.
And so for the last story of the day, actually, you know what? I'll let you, because we have a little additional time, you have one that's about AT&T and data. I'll let you talk about that one first.
Yeah, this one was just so obscure. An AT&T exec, I'm trying to pull it up to see exactly who it was, De La Verga. So he says at this, he tells a group of investors that who are clearly concerned about the expensive data costs of mobile internet, that high traffic users will need to, quote, change their pattern, or there will be other things that they are going to have to do to reduce their usage. So basically, this is a not so subtle hint that data users should be charged, maybe metering by the megabyte, or if you break a certain plateau, then you get charged. I think this is just an indication for me that I better sign another cell contract soon so I'm safe for another 2 years.
I don't even think it has to even that. It's just that I don't think anyone's going to stay on as a customer if they do such a thing, because whenever someone says something about, you know, bandwidth hogs or things like this, I just find that is the most cockamamie pile of bull that I've ever heard. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, data is something that can easily be pushed around. And if your infrastructure doesn't support it, you're charging consumers how much? I mean, the way that telecom industry works in general is that you build out your infrastructure, and then you charge an arm and a leg to your consumers for many...
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
So, sorry about that, listeners of the podcast. We had a technical difficulty and the bandwidth cut out. It had nothing to do with my rant about the telecom industry and how it works, because I love the telecom industry.
This podcast censored by AT&T.
Yes, as you know, most data through AT&T has to go through an NSA eventually. And I think on your end, you're on AT&T, you were saying?
Yeah, oh yeah, I got AT&T wireless and broadband at home.
Nice. Yeah, I think the one thing with the telecom industry, as I was saying, though, is that the way they work is they build an infrastructure for an untold amount of money, usually multitudes of millions, billions even, and then they just sit on it for a long time as they basically charge an arm and a leg times more than how much it costs them to deploy in the first place. And so with any telecom industry, whenever I hear someone complain about bandwidth hogs, you're not going to have users if you don't allow them to use modern technology. And Mr. De La Vega saying that consumers should limit their usage. There was a recent report that said that the average American now uses 30 gigabytes of data a day. That was in Wired magazine and several other publications. And to say people to limit it, I don't find that to be possible.
Right. Consumes 35 gigs, I think. So that includes like TV and voice lines. But yeah, that was a pretty interesting stat. I'm kind of curious how they landed on that one.
I thought so you're saying that's including television programs they watch, and then they compare it to how it would be in data format?
Yeah, as far as I remember. Yeah, it wasn't just online usage. There's no way the average American would. I mean, text is like a few kilobytes.
I mean, I can imagine like looking at enough images and pages nowadays, the average web page being like 5 megabytes to load through and stuff like that.
I would not say the average page is 5 megabytes. I mean, look at Wikipedia. It's like one photo and
okay, true. Text. But like a lot of like multimedia sites to load up all the information and have that streaming content in the background.
Yeah, I'm sure YouTube could eat up quite a bit. But I think AT&T wants to create this artificial market where it's just the very, very casual users paying this same price that they've set, and they just don't want the high-end users anymore, which is like, if you want to have the biggest network, then you got to take everybody.
Again, when it comes to things like this, I just want to smack him upside the head with a newspaper, rolled up newspaper, and be like, look what you did. Look what you did.
Bad.
Bad AT&T. Bad.
And you just stick its nose in it.
Yes, exactly. And to leave on a lighter note, recently there was a released image from the new Tron Legacy sequel. If anyone is a fan of Tron, prepare to drool. You'll see in the Enhanced podcast. I, for one, am looking forward to this film very, very much.
So this is going to lower my geek cred significantly, but I've never seen Tron.
Oh, poor boy. Go. When you're free, go find a copy. Go watch it. And watch in awe as, you know, the greatest story ever told from Disney is brought before your eyes.
I know, I have to. And I think what are they called? The light bikes? That's a pretty cool...
Light cycle, sir. Light cycle.
Light cycles. Oh, the iPhone game that I've been playing is called Light Bikes.
What's really cool is the entire soundtrack for the Neutron sequel is going to be done by Daft Punk.
Oh, bad. Were they involved in the original?
No, they were not. Dude, that was like the originals from like the early, early 80s.
When was Daft Punk? I thought they were, what, like late 80s?
No, like mid-90s.
Really?
Yeah, Daft Punk is newer.
They've managed to bury themselves in obscurity for the most part.
But they're Daft Punk, so they're awesome. And the fact that they're doing the entire soundtrack is, if you've ever seen any other Daft Punk movies like Interstellar 555 or their other, you know, documentary-style film that they did recently, their music and their ability of telling a story with it is just amazing, so...
All right, well, now I'm excited. I'm going to have to see the first Tron.
Yeah, they have the teaser trailer, if you've seen that already, and I'll link to that as well in the show notes. So,
I have. I was actually covering the announcement of the Tron 2 game.
Oh, interesting. How did it look?
They didn't show too much of it. It was all concept. But, I mean, it's the iPhone game is, while not official, it's fun. So you can easily make a light cycle game that's really cool.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you for being on the show today, Mark. Where can we find more of your work?
LATimes.com/tech and my personal blog at heyniceblog.com.
Okay. Thank you all for listening to the podcast. Next time we'll try not to be silenced by the man, if possible. this has been the Planet Podcast, and I'm your host, Patrick Runhouse. Have a good day. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.